From Birmingham, Alabama, you're listening to the Flat Picking Pilgrim's Progress. I'm your host, Gary Furr, and I'm so glad to have you with me today. Whether you're sitting in your favorite chair or riding along in the car, I'm glad we're going to get to spend this time together. This week begins Holy Week in the Christian world. Palm Sunday today marks the day when Jesus and his disciples entered into the city of Jerusalem for a final confrontation with authorities that would end in his death, and Christians proclaim the extraordinary event of the resurrection on Easter Sunday. I want to take today and share with you a reading from the audiobook that I wrote after I retired a few years ago, called Shadow Prayers. And these were the musings of Holy Week that I will share intermittently this week. The pandemic has receded from view, as someone has observed this morning in the New York Times in an article about its impact on us. But the author in that article, actually several authors, Lisa Lehrer, Jennifer Medina, and Reed Epstein, writing about how pandemic malaise shapes American politics, says this: fears of political violence, even civil war, are at record highs, and rankings of the nation's happiness at record lows. And views of the nation's economy and confidence in the future remain bleak, even as the country has defied expectations of a recession. Governor Kathy Hochul of New York was recorded as saying, "The pandemic pulled the rug from people. You were never quite as secure as you were. We're starting to get our grounding back, but I think it's just hard for people to feel good again." In many ways, Americans are great at running past hard things and moving on to the future. But something in my Christian faith, and so many, says you have to look within, you have to understand what has happened, and you have to see how all things are connected. We are part of a web of complexity. The tragedy and the joy of human existence, in which we are linked together both in our possibilities and our failures. So this week, I want to look back at what I wrote right after the pandemic and retirement as I reflected on what we had just been through. I don't do it to depress you. I hope you will appreciate it, maybe think of some things, maybe have a little understanding of what we've been through without hurrying past it, and understand that we can learn from where we have been. Learning takes a kind of humility that doesn't come easily to human beings, but it's important. It's part of being mature. It's part of being successful in life. And so, today I begin on Palm Sunday with a reflection that I wrote after retirement, looking back at that year in 2020 and reflecting on how it connected to the events of Holy Week. Holy Week. Holy Week is that time when Christians all over the world remember the final week of Jesus' life. It begins with Palm Sunday, when the crowds welcome Jesus into the city where he would die 5 days later. The center of Holy Week is the cross, and its pinnacle is the empty tomb on Easter morning, when Christ was raised from the dead by God. This passion story, Jesus' life, death, and resurrection, was the heart of the early church's proclamation. Small in number, facing hostility in their world, The church clung to their simple and life-changing story. No matter how messed up the world, someone had come to make a difference. Jesus' death overpowered the darkness of sin. Jesus' resurrected life was God's defeat of the ultimate power of death. Holy Thursday, or Maundy Thursday, marks the evening when Jesus took the Passover meal with his disciples and instituted what we call communion, or the Lord's Supper. Maundy Thursday comes from the Latin mandatum novum, new commandment, for the new commandment that Jesus gave to his disciples, that we love one another. Good Friday is a service marking the crucifixion. It is a somber remembrance of Jesus' death on the cross. Erosion. One day vanishes into the next without a signpost. Hopes weaken. On event, dying all alone, amid caring strangers here, wearing masks and gloves. Living and dying alone. My last year of full-time pastoral ministry forced us to profoundly deviate from some of the most time-honored behaviors of our usual routine and education. I was trained to be with people. I doubt there was a week during the first 40 years of pastoral ministry that I did not visit a hospital, a nursing home, someone's home, or have coffee or lunch with a member. Not to mention hours of conversations in incidental moments. Hearing about a heartache in the grocery store, aisle 4, when you bump into a member. Pastoral work depends not only on the scheduled places of connection, like worship and preaching and teaching, but, like Jesus taught us, going wherever people are and always being ready to listen and speak a word of the gospel hope. I have counseled marriages in the bleachers at ball games, listened to terrible childhoods while riding to a meeting, and heard confessions in the parking lot at Walmart. One day, not too long before the pandemic, I drove to University Hospital to see a member before surgery. 3 family members were there in the crowded waiting room, and we laughed and bantered, but also had important conversation about what their loved one was facing. As I got up to leave, a woman in a family sitting across from us leaned forward and touched my arm. "Are you a pastor?" "Yes, ma'am." "I wonder if you'd pray for my mother." And she went on to tell me about the situation. They were from another town, alone with this. I sat down and heard the story and said, "Why don't we pray for her right here?" This has happened often through the years. At funerals, weddings, all of the turning points of life, you are there as a representative of something bigger and more important than you yourself. If you handle it well, people are drawn to you. You learn not to be irritated by the interruptions of the, quote, important things, unquote, that you think you should be doing. Eventually, I determined that these interruptions were about as close to Jesus as I'd ever be and stopped being frustrated about them. When a woman reaches through a crowd to touch you, you learn to pick it up. Something important is here. And so, along with preaching alone, I found myself in 2020 being a pastor without crowds and visits and the constant beautiful interruptions. If we were together, we were told, we might spread the death slithering in our midst. And yet there is this unavoidable truth about calling to ministry. You are called to be there with them in the extreme places of their lives. Truthfully, I miss this aspect of my vocation the most. Upon retirement, this void was more pronounced, but during the last year, this was an intrusion of an unnatural governor on the engine of our work. We had to resort to the phones, emails, video, and FaceTime. more than once, I called someone and talked with them on an iPhone with my iPad so I could see their face as we talked. We asked the staff to call repeatedly to check in with members. It is the lifeblood of church, and to forsake it is to abandon the calling altogether. Unfortunately, nursing homes and hospitals shut down. Only one family member, and usually only at the point of possible death, could come in during a hospital stay. It was the right call, but suddenly people who were already isolated and depressed by sickness and the prospect of death were also cut off from the very support they needed. Of the 500,000 people who died of COVID during the last year, many had only a screen visual contact or a phone or perhaps only the hand of a nurse while they breathed their last. It was a horrible end to life. Those in nursing facilities and assisted living, meanwhile, sat in deep isolation to protect them. That same isolation assaulted their health in another way: the loss of social and familial presence. The news was full of stories of loved ones driving past and waving at a window for just a glimpse of someone they loved. It was a dark valley through which we passed. As the year rolled on, of course, certain realities had to be faced, and innovative and often odd ways of carrying on conjured up. For a while, our committee watching over the health of the congregation restricted our gatherings to 10 or less. For quite a while then, when a death occurred, we had to face the painful reality that a person whose life had touched so many others could not have opportunity for gathering all those, not even counting family members, who normally would come and embrace one another. Funerals in the South, particularly, are social events. There is healing in funeral rituals in all cultures, and what is universal is the coming together. People eat, laugh, cry, and tell stories that buoy up the family. It is a hard time as it is, but without these consolations and connections, the emptiness and incompleteness are amplified. How achingly hard it is not to come and embrace our friends. This pandemic robbed us even of the comforts we might give the dying and one another. It is as though a great wave of heartache had swept over the entire planet. Our church staff, like those in all congregations and organizations, had to ask, how will we do this now that we cannot do it as we once did? Touch, connection, and being together are so crucial to the existence of any organization, but there are peculiar ways that we do church. Communion, literally meaning in common, is ideally done with shared loaf and common cup, but we had to offer our first virtual Maundy Thursday and Easter too. How would we ordain without the laying on of hands? How could we have Sunday school for children and classes for older adults without being in the building? Should we take temperatures and administer tests before baptism? A lot to think about. This is not without precedent, of course. The church has been through all sorts of times in history when gathering was difficult or even temporarily impossible, and innovation always resulted from such times. These become the new rituals. Ritual is necessary. It is the way we negotiate passages in life. So we had to reinvent them. Rituals are the markers for the rhythms of life. You can't work all the time, play all the time, or, heaven forbid, be online all the time. You have to do other things. Some patterns carried on, but others had to be reconceived. I did my first online memorial service for Dr. William Poe. The only live event was the graveside service in Tuscaloosa with 8 of us present, 3 caregivers, his son Alan and daughter Jody, Cherie Morris, and 2 funeral directors. It was a beautiful day, and we stood round the outside of the green awning over the grave. Everyone was masked except me. The Lord's Prayer by Malott and Amazing Grace were sung a cappella. I read a selection from a little book Dr. Poe had written, a memoir. The chapter I read was about the faithfulness of God in all things. Dr. Poe, a historian and missionary and professor, had met with me a few years earlier and planned an elaborate funeral. I hope he smiled at the irony in heaven. It was different, but in other ways it was the same. We prayed, we worshiped, we remembered. And there was the familiar solemnity that is inevitable at a graveside. We had finished a responsibility to one another, passed through the door from one part of life to another, and turned to the new time. What we discovered in this odd time when our love had to be imagined and transmitted through symbols across screens is that certain realities abide. Relationship endures. That we had fellowship before the great separation enabled us not to completely be separated emotionally and spiritually, only physically. I have marveled at the innovations of my fellow staff members as they have labored creatively to keep the church together, moving and continuing in its life. I appreciated the extraordinary and manifold giftedness of the people of Vestavia Hills Baptist Church and its members. I don't know what the new normal will be down the road, but the essential realities of our life in this world carried on just fine. We could not hug, shake hands, or eat together, but love still connected us unstoppably. We still did the things we needed to do, and God showed us new ways that still accomplished it. Even death does not disrupt this extraordinary phenomenon among human beings and God. What matters is that we do not leave the important work of life undone while waiting for things to work out. That is the great mistake we might make, crisis or no. Life is always here to be lived, the life we have now. The work doesn't change, only figuring out how to get it done varies. We will and must eventually gather again. Otherwise, we will only have the truncated and pale imitation of life that virtuality affords. From online dating to church, something in us requires an eventual meeting, flesh with flesh, incarnate and real. The funerals of my final year were unlike any of my entire ministry. I was at risk multiple times, reliant only on a cloth mask to protect me because the scientists racing to produce a vaccine could only go so fast. More than once, I went into rooms full of people to pray, occasionally even to embrace. More than once, funerals became the origins of the spread of the disease. There was no way to be church without risk.
I'm Gary Furr, and this is the Flat Picking Pilgrim's Progress. Thanks for joining me today. You can find my music at G-A-F-U-R-R. GAFur.com, and you can go to my blog site for lots of other information and writings at GaryFur.me, GaryFurr.me. Once again, thank you so much. Join me next time on the Flat Picking Pilgrim's Progress.